Well, in the last couple of weeks, we've been hearing from our friends at Habitat for Humanity about their efforts to tackle the racial wealth gap in our community when it comes to housing. And one of the speakers at Habitat's recent community breakfast on racial equity is joining us now to talk a little further about this issue, as well as to provide a national perspective on housing policy and the economic trends we're seeing around home ownership. I'm joined in the studio by Jim Parrott, who's a fellow at the Urban Institute, but who is also a housing advisor for the Obama administration in the early 2010s. And he's also an advisory board member for the J. Ronald Tel Williger Foundation for Housing America's Families. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to drop by and speak with us on 97.9 The Hill.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And this conversation is brought to us by Habitat for Humanity of Orange County, whose community breakfast on racial equity you just recently spoke at as a panelist. It seemed like a fascinating conversation, a very complex conversation. I think the place to start, though, is what everybody's talking about with the housing market these days, which is, holy smokes, everything is so expensive. Prices seem to be going through the roof for a really extended period of time. Your perspective, Jim, what is driving the current housing market to be kind of this level of bananas we haven't seen in a little while?
Yeah, bananas is a good word. So there is less vacancy for purchase or for rent than any time in my lifetime. So it goes back to almost World War II levels, the level of tightness in the market that you're seeing. And the reason for that is home builders are building about 150,000 less units a year than we need. And this has been going back like a decade. So we're 2.5 million units short. And so that lack of supply is driving up home prices all over the place, both to purchase and to rent. It's been going back a long time now. Lots of things driving it, mainly around high fixed costs for building, especially at the bottom end of the market. So materials are really expensive. Lumber is really expensive. Land is really constrained. Communities like ours, Chapel Hill is a good example, have made it relatively hard to build downtown in particular. So it's hard to create density, hard to create more units. So there's this confluence of factors that just make it really hard to create as much housing as we need. And as a result, you're seeing prices sort of steadily go through the roof all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah, and it definitely feels like it's highlighted here in our community because of the issues that we face in terms of, as you mentioned, land use and having such an attractive place for jobs in the Research Triangle Park and at UNC and stuff like that. But it really is the case across the country that we're seeing kind of similar issues of it's tricky to build here because of X, Y, and Z, or it's more expensive to build here because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, it's been a trend that's really been deepening over the last 10 years. So if you go back right after the last housing crisis was sort of sorting itself out. So if you go back 10 years plus, the home building sort of infrastructure all but collapsed. So a lot of home builders went out of business. They shuttered their businesses. And it took several years for them to begin to rebound. And they rebounded first at the top of the market. That is, they rebounded for expensive homes where the margins were greatest. And after a few years, they could sort of move down into the middle of the market, workforce housing, as it were. And they're only beginning now to get to entry-level housing, which is where most of the gap still is. And it's really because the cost of the fixed cost of buying homes or building homes, as I mentioned, is so high that it makes it prohibitive to build at the bottom of the market. So as a result, entry-level homes are exceedingly expensive because there's not that many of them. Affordable rental housing is quite hard to come by because there's just not that much of it. And then every region's got its own idiosyncratic challenges. In Chapel Hill, you've got all this demand from college kids, to rent homes. So investors have come in and bought up a lot of what would have traditionally been entry-level homes for families to rent to college kids because rents are going up 30% or so year over year. So it makes more money to be an investor in a home than it makes sense to take out a mortgage to buy the home. So there are all kinds of unique sort of issues that vary from one region to the next. But the one common denominator is it is uniformly more expensive to buy a home now and to rent than it was 3-4 years ago, pretty much all across the country.
And so what are some of the effects of that on people themselves? Usually we talk about the effects of the market itself or the community, as we were just talking about. Here's what's going on in Chapel Hill and the Triangle. But what does that translate to people who are trying to, pay monthly expenses when it comes to housing?
Yeah, it's a real bear. The ripple effects for this economically are pretty dramatic. So Going back generations, the primary means for building wealth in the middle class has been homeownership. It's not been investing in the stock market. It's not been putting money in your 401k. It's been paying your monthly mortgage, paying that debt down, and building up equity in your house. You build up equity in the house. You pass that equity on to your kids when you sell the house. And that's the way families have built wealth through the generations, especially the middle class. And so as a result, you've got this big disparity between the median wealth of homeowners, which is about $250,000, and the median wealth of renters, which is only about $6,000. This is enormous disparity. And so the rise in the cost of housing is making all of this worse because it means it's harder to get out of the rental bucket and over into the homeownership bucket. Because one, it's harder to save money as a renter because your rent's going up. And two, it's harder to buy your first home because the cost of that first home is going up. And so it delays your ability to buy your first home, which makes it harder to build wealth over time. And so that's having a ripple effect just in the disparity of wealth between the bottom, say, third of the country and the top third. That ripple affects through wealth disparities across racial lines and so forth, because as we were talking about the Habitat event the other day, a majority of African Americans rent their home. They don't own their home. So they tend to fall into that rental bucket, which means they tend to be closer to the $6,000 of median wealth and not the $250,000 of median wealth. And so this struggle to move from being a renter to being a homeowner because of the rising prices is has a lot of collateral damage, to be sure.
We're speaking with Jim Parrott, who is a fellow at the Urban Institute and a former housing advisor for the Obama administration on 97.9 The Hill. Conversations being brought to us by Habitat for Humanity of Orange County, who recently held a community breakfast on racial equity, and Jim was part of that panel. What were some of your takeaways from that discussion on that panel, Jim, about what our local Habitat is doing to try and combat that, but also, you know, your perspective of what can be done nationally?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I guess starting at the national level first, and Congressman Price was there as well, which gives you a nice national perspective on what policymakers in D.C. can do. You've got to change the basic economics for building at the bottom end of the market. I mean, the bottom line is the economics don't work to build at scale at the bottom end of the market. They work better at the top. And you can do that really through two, maybe three main levers. The first is the tax code, create tax incentives for folks to build at the bottom end of the market, make the math work better. Second is grants, which typically go to philanthropies and municipalities, which are also intended to sort of change the math of building at the bottom end of the market. And third, the federal policymakers need to find ways to create incentives for communities to be better about their zoning decisions. I mean, one of the biggest impediments, as we sort of mentioned before, is that communities very much like Chapel Hill, for a bunch of historical reasons, have been pretty reticent to allow building much density, you know, near downtown, near where the jobs are, near where folks want to work. As a result, the cost of land is pretty prohibitive, and even where you can find the land to build, the cost of building on the land with any density is prohibitive. So, but federal policymakers they've got levers to push and nudge even at the local level. But then you need outfits like Habitat to step up on a region-by-region basis. But the key is, and this is what the Orange County Habitat's doing, they've got to step up at scale. It can't be a house here, a house there. It's got to be, you know, almost building communities from scratch, which is what these guys are doing here. The Habitat in Orange County has raised upwards of $5 million for one community called Weaver's Grove, and I think they need seven and a half to finish, but it'll have 250 new homes, almost half of which are affordable. You need efforts like that all over the place, really region by region, to fill a gap. Without it, if you're going only home by home, it's just going to take too long. The gap's too deep to fill.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see as that project progresses, take root in the community, how much of an example it can set for others, and if those successes or if there are trial and errors to learn from that, and then see if it does kind of grow on that national scale of here's what other habitats or other groups can ultimately do. It's going to be interesting to follow over these next decade. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it offers a nice example of bring together private money, private resources, some government help where you need it. I mean, it really is an all hands on deck sort of effort that's going to take many years to dig out from under. And it takes private funding, it takes private initiatives, it takes sort of public-private outfits like Habitat has tended to be, and it takes policymakers like Congressman Price to push from the top as well. The hole's too deep for anything short of that.
Yeah. I have two follow-up questions to some things you mentioned earlier. You said that this is the most wild housing market since World War II. Do you know the historical context of like how we eventually got out of that housing market? And is that anything that we could try and learn from today to prepare for?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was a really different world back then.
I'm sure.
Home ownership rate was much lower. Back then you had a federal level, again, all hands on deck effort to address the homeownership shortfall. And so there were a bunch of laws passed in the 40s and 50s that were intended to make homeownership more accessible to lots of folks coming back from World War II. The upside to that is it was sort of wildly successful in helping those it intended to help. It unfortunately set a lot of the groundwork for some racial disparities that we're still yet to dig out from under. There was redlining back at that time, which meant there were communities that federal policymakers, in essence, decided or determined neighborhoods in which federal policymakers wouldn't provide government support for federal lending. And the neighborhoods they chose to, in essence, redline out were almost all African-American communities. So even though there were some great things done in the 40s and 50s to accelerate homeownership, they were largely done for white families, not for black families. And so we're still living with the vestiges of all of that back then. But what you do need now, which is comparable, is there needs to be recognition really at the federal level that it's going to take some pretty heavy lifting and a lot of federal dollars to make all of this right, which is what we threw at it back then and what they're going to need to throw at it again now.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other follow-up that I had is, of course, the discussion that we had with Jennifer Player and other folks with Habitat, which is the challenges of just how heavily the wealth of homeownership is weighed versus renting. In your perspective, is there any sort of possibility we would ever see a shift from all of that wealth being around home ownership to kind of an evening of the scales?
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, I debate with other economists about this a lot. In an ideal world, our wealth wouldn't be so heavily invested in home ownership. You want to diversify it across a bunch of asset classes so that if the value of your asset, you know, in housing goes up or down, all of your wealth doesn't go up or down with it necessarily. Yeah. So at the upper end of the wealth distribution, people do diversify their assets. They are invested in the stock market, and they see as a result more insulation against downside risk. It is unfortunate that at the lower end of the wealth spectrum, we're all in on housing and not diversified. But that's in part because the federal tax code and federal policy generally provides so much incentive to push us into home ownership. And it doesn't really provide the same sort of incentive to push us into other asset classes. That's sort of one reason why we're so heavily weighted in favor of housing. But then the other is just the way that behaviorally we're set up to save. I mean, if you have a mortgage, every month you've got to pay whatever that mortgage is. And a big chunk of that goes towards building equity in your house. It's sort of like forced savings. There isn't really anything comparable outside of the housing context that pushes you so naturally into savings. So if you had something comparable with 401ks, for instance, where you were forced to put a couple thousand bucks every month into your 401k, then as a result, you'd wind up diversified. Yeah. So probably the solution, this would be a really long-term solution, isn't so much depressing the incentives to invest in housing, because there are a bunch of collateral benefits to investing in housing at a community level. But it's more finding something comparable to nudge people into saving in the same way in other asset classes to then diversify their assets across a wider range of distribution so that they're not so at risk of losing money when the housing market goes up or down.
We're speaking with Jim Parrott, former Obama administration housing advisor and current fellow at the Urban Institute. And with how, as you just heard, with how complex this topic is, there's no way we'd be able to squeeze it all into 15 minutes. So if you want to revisit the Community Breakfast Racial Equity Panel that Jim was a panelist for, you can head to Habitat for Humanity of Orange County's website, orangehabitat.org, to find their racial equity and housing report and video of that panel. As we wrap up here, Jim, anything else that you think is important for our audiences to keep in mind when it comes to the racial equity in home ownership conversation?
Yeah, I guess it's important to the degree you're involved in local politics, there's not nearly enough pushing at the local level to get local decision makers to think more inclusively about their zoning. There's a fair amount of federal level debate about this, but for whatever reason, it's not trickled down to local decision making, which is where it matters most. So if you're involved in your town council, if you're involved in conversations with local policymakers, it's important that voices that care about affordable housing are at the table next to those that don't want developments in their neighborhood in order to equalize the conversation a bit.
Well, again, we're very appreciative for you swinging by the station and taking the time, and thankful to Habitat for Humanity of Orange County for bringing us this conversation. Again, Jim Parrott, thank you so much, and hope we'll be able to have more conversations like this before long.
My pleasure.